Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. How are you, Daniel?
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
Very well, thank you. And we're going to be talking about foreign policy, but it looks like it's real foreign and way out there. So I wanted to go over a little bit about the wisdom of creating this Space Force. You know, it was announced rather a surprise yesterday, although it's been talked about. Even Bush talked about we need a military presence in space. But of course, I don't think they need a military presence in space. I think they want to find new places to spend more money.
Yeah.
So, but Trump has mentioned it before. But yesterday, out of the clear blue, he says, I guess he wrote a directive that that's what the goal will be, and he wants it equal to the Air Force. You know, so that means a lot of funding it's going to take. And the interesting thing is, if he does that and has the equal funding of just our Air Force, it will be bigger than anybody else's military budget. But we're still looking for enemies. So maybe we've conquered everybody here, so we have to go to outer space. And he surprised the people. But you know, when things like this come up, I often think, what's he distracting us from? And maybe he's distracting from the trade war. That's a big deal right now, and there's a lot of ramifications from that. But anyway, wanted to just talk a little bit about this, and I know you've given a little bit of thought, and I don't know whether you've come up with any good reasons for this or not.
Well, it was classic Trump. He was speaking before, I believe, the National Space Council. They were trying to deal with the problem of space junk and stuff flying up in space. What are they going to do with it? And when he just blurted out, and here's a couple of quotes, "My administration is reclaiming America's heritage as the world's greatest spacefaring nation." Okay. But then he goes on, "Our destiny beyond the Earth is not only a matter of national identity, but a matter of national security. So important for our military."
You know, that's the whole thing. No matter what it is, it's for national security. I mean, if they start a war, which they shouldn't have, it's jeopardizing us in many ways, and they have to do something about it, then they decide they have to expand this bad policy, and it's for national security purposes. And then if you resist, you can be painted as a bad man, and so you can't say anything. And right again, here, this is for national security purposes. But, you know, he wants to be dominant, American dominance in there. And I was thinking, how can we be dominant in this effort? The only thing I think we're going to end up being dominant in, and we already are in many ways, is debt.
Yeah, yes.
And that is going to continue. This means more spending. And I imagine the military-industrial complex has been looking at this, and they're probably lining up. But my guess is, I don't think we should hold our breath because tomorrow all of a sudden it's going to happen. I think we're going to run out of money before this thing really goes very far. But it's just the attitude. It's just the philosophy of this. And I don't know how much resistance there's going to be, but you're not going to get it from probably Republicans. You're not going to get it from the military manufacturers. You know, they're not going to say anything.
That's why it's so deviously clever to call it a matter of national security, because the Republicans are going to be all behind it. The Democrats don't want to be left behind because they also get a lot of money from Lockheed and Boeing. They get a lot of contributions for their elections, so they're not going to want to be left behind either. However, it is an issue. I mean, this would require an act of Congress. You can't just sign a piece of paper and create a whole new military branch. So I think it'll be less a question of money and more a question of turf war, because there's going to be a lot of Air Force people that say, hold on, that's our turf, that's our territory, don't rip it off, don't rip it away.
And they couldn't possibly think of doing this if we didn't have the privilege of printing the world currency, you know. And since we print the world reserve currency, the dollar, deficits mean less. We can postpone the payment, and they can run up the spending. So the congressmen talk about the deficit, but if they were really worried, Republicans or Democrats, it's amazing how many Democrats now are criticizing the debt deficits of Trump. But if they were serious, they wouldn't be doing this. But they can talk about this, and nobody say, "Are you crazy?" You know, if you had a percentage increase in your individual home budget, and people decided, well, I'm in debt, but I'm going to double and triple my vacation expenditures. Because you can't do that. You don't have the money. But that's not the case here. And they believe that that's good economics, because that's what they're taught about economics, is if you're in this position, we're in a special position. But I think where eventually Trump will lose credibility on this is because it gives us tremendous benefits, but he's saying that we're getting the short end of the stick. To tell you the truth, the setup that we have, where we run the show and we print the money and we dictate to others, I tell you what, we have a tremendous advantage there. So I think this idea of blaming others for some of our shortcomings and some of the blowback from these economic policies, I think that's going to stimulate even more dumping of our treasury bills. And, you know, the Russians have started to do it and the Chinese have started to do it. China's getting in more trouble and that's going to happen. So this whole idea, assumption, well, put it into Congress and they'll vote for it. Nobody votes against this spending. But hopefully we have people wake up before that happens.
Yeah, and it's, you know, calling it a matter of national security, that also is kind of code word for preventing you from really taking a good look at what the implications are. And I think Secretary Mattis, the defense secretary, for whatever his faults, I do think he takes his mission seriously. I think he knows, if you're asking me to do more than I can do, I'm going to look bad if I can't do it. And he, as recently as October, openly opposed this idea of a new space force. Here's what he wrote. I oppose the creation of a new military service and additional organizational layers at a time when we are focused on reducing overhead and integrating joint warfighting efforts. And that's, if you think about what he's talking about, he's talking about layers of bureaucracy. People don't realize that. They think that you'll snap your finger and there'll be a nice shiny new force with new uniforms. But think about all the undersecretaries, deputy undersecretaries. Think of how many thousands of new jobs, probably a separate new intelligence service that you'll have to create out of whole cloth. Thousands of jobs, bad jobs.
I want you to calm down a bit. You're presenting this too much like, wow, this looks good. There'll never be unemployment again in the world. But that's not likely to happen. You know, this subject of space came up in the debates. I think the former speaker, Newt Gingrich, brought it up. And I didn't have much creative to say, but I did say that, well, talking about outer space and putting money into going to the moon and this sort of thing, I said, the only thing I can think of is maybe that would facilitate our ability to ship off some of our politicians into space. But I don't think that's what they're thinking about. They're just thinking about spending money and people making more profits for national security reasons and not worrying about the debt. And it sounds good. It could be a distraction, you know, from some of the more serious problems that we have.
And, you know, the think about Pentagon spending, and this is legendary. And depending on who you listen to, they lost a $21 trillion they can't account for in spending over the decades, this many billion. Who knows the exact number? What we do know is that the Pentagon has never been audited. It cannot be. It apparently cannot be audited. Nobody knows where the money is spent. It's just like a perfect self-licking ice cream cone. No matter what happens, if you question it, you're questioning security, questioning national security.
It seems to me like if they're just looking for boondoggles, why wouldn't they decide to go to two spots on the Earth, North Pole and South Pole, and decide, well, we're going to build air bases down there and we're going to conquer these weather problems and do it. But thinking about outer space and all this activity is so big. But we don't go into these inhospitable places like the North Pole. We have a little bit of activity there, but there's not going to be a tank war down there. There's not going to be any ground troops fighting over the North and South Pole. So this whole idea that this is a military adventure, and I think Trump was making, he was emphatic about this being military, like you say, that becomes easier political sell.
Yeah, and I think in a way Trump sort of gets it, and he almost sort of makes fun of it. And there's kind of a long quote that I would put up. This is a transcript of him yesterday. And here Lockheed Martin was in the audience, Boeing was in the audience, Grumman was in all of the big military contractors. And he sort of got the idea of how expensive this is. He said, I don't like it when Boeing and Lockheed get together because the pricing only goes up. But that's okay in this case, laughter. I don't know. I don't love that stuff. We're going to have to talk about that. You're joining these two companies. And he goes on, you know, and he says, Dennis, friend of mine, great guy, head of Boeing, and boy, have you done a good job on all fronts, commercial, military, both of you. What a good job you've done. But stay apart, stay apart. Don't get together, stay apart. So he's sort of in his own way, it's somewhat endearing, but he recognizes these massive expenses.
Right. And, you know, this little episode brought to my attention and thought back about, you know, John Quincy Adams, when he advised us to go not to go about the world searching for monsters to destroy. I'd like to put up a quote by Adams on the screen, because he makes such a great point.
Yeah.
And he gave this speech in 1821. He was Secretary of State. And there was a time in 1821, the Greeks wanted to get independence from the Ottoman Empire, and thought that because we were sympathetic to freedom and liberty, he wanted us to get engaged. And the whole purpose of his speech was to show why we shouldn't intervene in this affair over here. It's a great speech. Now, I want to, there's the most well-known part of his speech. America does not go abroad in search of monsters to destroy. She is the well-wisher to freedom and independence of all. She is the champion and vindicator only of her own. And there's a little bit more to that quote, that I like. It also said, she, United States, will recommend the general cause by the countenance of her voice, which is tone, and the benignant sympathy of her example. Mm. Tone and voice and diplomacy and set an example. I must have plagiarized his speech way back or
something. Starting to wonder now.
So, but then there's one other thing that he adds in a second paragraph, or a paragraph following that, in that speech. And when they use the word she, that is, he's talking about United States. She might, if we follow this effort to get involved over in Europe, she, my states, might become the dictatress of the world. She would be no longer the ruler of her own spirit if that happened. I think that's fantastic.
Wow.
And I think there's something wrong going on socially in our culture right now. People can't quite figure things out, people are distressed, and we have cultural Marxism and all kinds of things going on. And in this whole thing, we would become no longer the ruler of our own spirit. And of course, people do want to think of America's spirit and goodness, and we should go about, and a lot of people think we should use force to spread that American goodness of the world. But I think he has it right.
Yeah.
I mean, it is something setting a tone and setting an example, and that is what the American spirit is in a good sense.
It almost gives me a chill to hear that, because he's almost saying, if we go ahead and set up an empire, we will lose our soul. I think a lot of us feel we've done that.
That is essentially what it is. But I don't know if anybody's going to pay much attention or put it in the context of this. But I don't fear the outcome of this, because I think there's a self-limitation to this. This would be like, wonder what it would have been like if we were in the Soviet system in 1988-89, when there were very few people. Even now, you don't go back and read, you know, these dire predictions. You know, in 1 year, the Soviet system would collapse.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. But it was a failed system, and it did fail, and it came apart. And I think that's what will happen to us. But that doesn't mean, and they didn't all of a sudden have a perfect system afterwards. It improved, because it wasn't quite as ruthless, but it was not all of a sudden a libertarian system.
Yeah.
But they're not doing badly compared to some of the other ruthless countries in the world. So I think the end stages are coming for our system, and this kind of nonsense, oh, I'm sorry, that's too strong a word, about going into space and spending $160 billion for a space force, I mean, that's going to help end it. I mean, common sense would say, well, we don't have the wealth to do that, and they're not going to take our printed money forever. So it's coming to an end, and that's why we should be motivated and optimistic that a replacement can be provided, and it has to be described. You have to have the goal. And they say, well, you're too idealistic. That's not possible. But total communism was idealistic, and they always knew where they were going, and it was known to be a failure, and it fell apart. But I think what our goals have to be, they have to be known, and we have to be idealistic, and we have to be realistic in the sense that it's not going to arrive tomorrow in a perfect sense, because man is imperfect. But there's no reason in the world that we shouldn't have some ideals that we could strive for, and that's why I found John Quincy Adams' speech rather fascinating. The other thing I sort of liked about John Quincy Adams was the fact that he was in today's world would be humble. Can you imagine Obama and Clinton running for a House seat and joining the House of Representatives? He did that for years, and yet at the same time I liked him because he went back in there. He was anti-slave, and every session he introduced amendment to the Constitution to abolish slavery. You know? So he had a philosophy that was a little bit different than, you know, it didn't get passed. And unfortunately, it ended up badly, you know, with the Civil War, which was totally unnecessary compared to the alternatives.
They just passed his bill.
Yeah,
just like if they just
right.
passed some of your bills when you were in there, we would have had less trouble. But on Congress, you know, the 2018 NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, directed the DOD to prepare a report on establishing a Space Corps, look into a roadmap to establish a separate military department. So they're on it. And you know that Lockheed, you know the lobbyists, you know these guys are pushing it, no question about it. But coming back to what we said earlier, and you made a point, I realized as I was speaking, I'm talking about jobs and people are going to get excited. But these are the jobs that are the jobs that suck the money out of the people in the middle of the country who work so hard, who wonder why their taxes are going up, who wonder why the value of the dollar is going down. These are those kinds of jobs that suck the money, and instead of preparing and creating something for us and improving our lives, they do the opposite, the ultimate broken window fallacy.
And you know what it makes me think of is, you know, I always talk about debt and malinvestment. Malinvestment means when interest rates are low, the money gets spent in the wrong place. In this case, it's being spent up there. We're burning it up by the barrels. it's not a good investment.
No, and that reminds me, once again, we are going to talk about our military empire at our 2018 conference. We talk about media and war as a focus, but we're also going to talk about the military. So we have some tickets to sell. We want to get together with people. RonPaulInstitute.org/conference. Look into it if you're going to be around, if you can travel. We always have a great time, and we're looking forward to meeting you.
Well, very good, Daniel, and we're looking forward to that meeting that we're going to have in Washington. And I want to thank the audience for joining us today. I know this this program was a little bit esoteric, but it was in the news. Yesterday it was a proposal, made no sense to me, cost a lot of money, and it's all done in the name of national security, spend a lot of money that we don't have, and yet they do it with a straight face. They do it with a straight face and think nothing of it. And unfortunately, though, the price will be paid, and I think our goal here is try to explain it, why we shouldn't be doing this, what should we be doing, how can we stop this, and how can we have a good foreign policy that we can be proud of and feel good about. And I thought the quotes that I read from John Quincy Adams gave us a hint as to what type of a policy we should have to make us feel much better and also to lead us toward peace and prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.